I mean, there has been a lot of changes, and some significant to this Montreal Canadiens roster. It feels like Marc Bergevin is a cat on perhaps his sixth or seventh life here. What do you make, as you look at the roster on paper, for whatever that's worth, of the changes the Habs have made entering this season?
The most noticeable thing being at the training camp was just the size. I mean, the Canadiens have always been, at least in recent years, a small, fast team. They're huge now. You know, you throw Josh Anderson in there. You have Joel Edmondson, Romanov on defense, a Russian rookie. Now, everybody on defense, now all six of their starting defensemen are at least 6 foot tall. And there's only one of them under 200 pounds, and that's Kulak, who's like 192. So this is a big team now, but they're still fast. And the thing they have that this team hasn't had in years is depth. You know, you look on the taxi squad, you've got Michael Frolik and Corey Perry. You know, they both cleared waivers yesterday. You know, two veterans of Stanley Cup rings that aren't even on this team. You know, 2 years ago or last year, they would have probably been on the second or third line. So there's depth now. There's some scoring depth. And for the first time in a long time, as I've written a couple of times, I think the Canadiens fans have some hope. I mean, the excitement in this city leading into this game plan is just, it's huge. I mean, people are excited that there's you know, the other big difference, too, is, you know, for the last three seasons, this is a team that's played about $8 million under the cap. And in a salary cap league, it's hard to compete when you're not spending all the money available to you. This goes back to when, you know, Andrei Markov and Radulov both left. Marc Bergevin got nothing in return, and he seemed to have no plan B at the time, and he was stuck with this money, and nobody wanted to take it. Nobody wanted to come to Montreal. So now, you know, he found some people in the offseason who wanted the money, Josh Anderson, Tyler Toffoli, you know, Joel Edmondson, as I mentioned. They now have a real backup goalie in Jake Allen. So, yeah, this is a much different-looking team and a much better-looking team also.
And they have goaltender depth, Stu.
Yeah.
Is there an idea of how they're going to manage the workload of Carey Price and Jake Allen?
Claude Julien hasn't said specifically, but he said it's not going to be a case where Carey Price plays 45 games and Jake Allen plays 11. So that gives you an idea right there. He's going to play more than 11 games. So you're probably looking maybe 20. Carey Price, you know, even Carey said during training camp, he's not a guy who likes to give up his net. So that's going to be an issue, too. Like when they're going to, I think they're going to have to tell Carey he's not going in goal. The other thing Carey said that's going to help him, he thinks, is the fact that they can carry three goalies this year.
Right.
So he won't be able, you know, he won't have, Charlie Lindgren is going to be the third goalie. So Price won't have to be in practice all the time. As he said, practice is important and it's important for his game. But instead of standing in the net and getting bombarded with shots in practice, he'll be able to maybe step to the side with goalie coach Stefan Waite and work on some of the little technical things he wants to work on. So I think that's really going to help him. Plus the fact, Josh, I mean, last year, Claude Julien, he got upset at me during a post-game press conference when I asked him about if he was overplaying Carey Price. You know, he played him like 11 games in a row. But in Claude's defense, he had no real choice. Like, he had nobody else to put in there. He put somebody else in there, it was like throwing away the game. So now he has that option to put in another guy with a Stanley Cup ring as your backup goalie. And, you know, knock on wood, nothing would happen to Carey Price. But in past season, if Carey Price got hurt, season was over. And that's not the case this year again. So, again, it just goes back to what I was saying at the beginning, just the depth this team has is probably the depth and size are the two biggest things that I've noticed.
So when Claude gets mad at you, what happens?
Actually, I get along well with Claude. He ended his news conference. That's a stupid question. I'm fed up of answering this, and he ended the news conference. But no, Claude's a good guy, but he had a lot of pressure on him last year. And part of the pressure was that you know, he had nobody else to put in goal. I mean, yeah. Charlie Lindgren, in his defense, there's a reason Charlie Lindgren wasn't drafted, right? I mean, any player wasn't drafted. They just weren't that good at that point in their career. Charlie Lindgren's a real battler. He'll fight, and he's not a big guy, though. He's sort of a throwback goalie. He reminds you of Rogie Vachon or even like a ball hockey goalie. He's bouncing and diving all over the place, making saves. He's not your sort of 6'4" technical goalie you see in the NHL today. So that'll help, too. Like, Charlie Lindgren is the third goalie. He's going to be happy to be here. He'll work hard in practice. He'll battle in practice. The guys really like him. So the goaltending situation, you know, you can make a pretty good argument that the Canadiens have the best goaltending situation in the NHL right now.
You really haven't made it, Stu, until you get a coach pissed off at you on Zoom, on Zoom, right?
That's true. I guess Tortorella will probably,
yes.
Do they open tonight? That might happen tonight.
How do you yell at somebody through a computer screen and just start pointing at a laptop? Like that.
It would be even better, Stu, if your camera wasn't on. It'd just be the black screen with like the silhouette, and he gets mad at the silhouette. Yeah, I think that would have been better.
You get the PR person next to him hitting mute on the microphone.
Right.
All that stuff. Start controlling the message. What
for guys covering the Blue Jackets, that might be a challenge this year. Tortorella pissed off on Zoom.
With Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette, what would be, and this is in line with the question you asked Claude that upset him last year, but what would be the fair assessment, the objective assessment of Carey Price's play over the last two or three seasons?
Inconsistent. And that's one of the reasons the Canadians have struggled. Carey's gone through periods in each of the last few seasons where he's been bad for, you know, 6, 7, 8-game stretches. The Canes had 2 8-game losing streaks last year. I mean, it's not all on Carey Price, obviously, but part of it is, you know, when you lose that many games in a row, you think the goalie might steal one, especially when you're paying the goalie $10 million a year. It hasn't happened. And I think part of that goes back to, again, the fact that he was just playing so many games. And he's also getting older. I mean, you know, Father Time's undefeated. Carey Price is no exception to that rule. But what Price showed in the bubble last year in Toronto is just how well he can play when he's rested. And, you know, he's fantastic. And to go back to the depth I was talking about, the last two times the Canes have been in the playoffs, they lost in the first round. I mean, the win over Pittsburgh, the NHL doesn't consider the playoffs, right? So they lost to the Rangers in 2017, I guess it was, and they lost to Philadelphia this year. Both times, Carey Price had a goals against average well under 2, and he had a save percentage in the 930s. I mean, that should be enough to win a series, but they didn't have any scoring depth. They just couldn't score enough goals. Now, if this team gets into the playoffs, and I think they will, they have some scoring depth. You go back to when they lost to the Rangers. You know, Max Pacioretty, I remember after they were eliminated, was almost in tears in the locker room. He didn't score a goal in that series, and he took a lot of heat in Montreal for it. But, you know, if you're a coach and you only have to really shut down one scorer on the other team in a 7-game series, it's not that hard. It'll be more difficult now. The Canes' top line of Dano, Gallagher, and Tatar isn't their top line now. I mean, you know, they have a sort of 1A, 1B, and 1C lines now. Their top line should be Suzuki with Drouin and Anderson. So that's, you know, right there you have, you know, better matchups for the Dano, Gallagher, Tatar line, less pressure on them to score. I mean, Brendan Gallagher's been the only consistent goal scorer they've really had for the last few years. And Mark Bergevin is really counting heavily on Josh Anderson. You know, he took a gamble on him, hoping, you know, the big power forward. He had a horrible year last year in Columbus, scoring only one goal. He needed season-ending shoulder surgery. He traded Max Domi to Columbus to get him, gave Anderson a long-term contract. So he's going to be one of the keys for this team this season. The other two keys are obviously the two young centers. You got Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi. They played really well in the bubble last season, but that was a 10-game sample. You know, they both struggled during the regular season. Kotkaniemi got sent down to Laval. Suzuki didn't, I think he had one assist in the last 9 games of the regular season. He sort of hit a wall. So now Suzuki's 21, Kotkaniemi's 20. They're counting heavily on these guys. But, you know, they have some better players around them. Suzuki and Drouin had really good chemistry in the bubble last year. You throw Josh Anderson, a power forward, on with them. That should really help. Kotkaniemi's playing with his fellow Finn, Joel Armia. They had chemistry last year. You had Tyler Toffoli, a natural goal scorer with them. So that looks good. So as I said, you have three lines there that should be able to score. And then your fourth line, you have Paul Byron and Arturi Lehkonen, two veterans with Jake Evans, who's a young center who played really well in the bubble last year, a seventh-round draft pick, former University of Notre Dame captain, sort of a diamond in the rough that the Canadiens have found, who fits in well in that that fourth center spot. So, as I said, lots of depth on this team, and there's a reason for Montreal fans to be excited.
Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. Now, Stu, I don't want to age you, but you've been with the paper for a while. Before social media, before even this internet thing.
And back when I had hair.
And back when you had hair. And you've had different roles there. Just pivoting away from hockey for a minute. It feels like the talk of, since COVID hit, the talk of the return to baseball in Montreal has quieted some. We just saw the Rays get to the World Series and they promptly dismantled their team. Has there been much scuttlebutt in Montreal on a potential return of the Expos over the last 6 months or so?
There's been some. I mean, there's some members of the Montreal media who are real hardcore baseball fans and lived and breathed with the Expos, who really get excited every time something comes up. I grew up with the Expos. I was a member of the Rusty Staub fan club. I remember 50-cent bleacher seats at Jerry Park, some of my best memories of my youth through the Expos. I just don't see it happening, personally.
You don't, huh?
I don't. I mean, this idea of, like, does a team go, a team, half the games in Tampa and half the games in Montreal, like, what's that connection?
And why would you build a stadium for 40 games?
Why would you build two stadiums? Why would they want a stadium? I think the owner in Tampa is just using Montreal as leverage, personally, to try and get a new stadium in Tampa. But, I mean, yeah, so what happens if, you know, they start the season in Tampa, they play, you know, 81 games or whatever, and they come to Montreal and they're already 10 games out of first place? Mm. Are people going to pack the stadium? I think, you know, Montreal's are really an event city. It's become an event city. The Grand Prix is an event. The tennis tournament here in the summer is an event. Canadians games are an event. I just don't know if the baseball market's there for 81 baseball games a year. And to have half of the games, like, it just makes no sense. Okay, so let's say, okay, the Leafs are going to play half their games in Toronto and play half their games in, you know, Carolina. Like, what? You know, how does that make any sense? How are you going to have fan support in both of those cities? So to me, I know Stephen Bronfman has a lot of money and he wants it to happen. And there's a family history. His father, Charles, owned the team. Guys who have a lot of money can make things happen. But he's not going to build a stadium with his own money, I don't think. And, you know, try and get a government after COVID and all the financial hardships that governments and companies, everything have been hit for. Are you going to give out money to build a stadium so that for a billionaire owner so that, you know, multimillionaire players can play in it? I personally just don't see it happening. And that's from someone, as I said, the Expos were a big part of my childhood, and, you know, Rusty Staub was my first sports hero.
Mm. Well, that less than positive note, I had dreams of 37,000 seat stadium right in the downtown core and an American League East opponent for the Blue Jays. Could you imagine those, Stu? 19 games a year, Toronto, Montreal. It'd be amazing.
They missed their chance there after that 93 season and the season when they almost won, and they had the plans for the the new stadium right beside the Bell Center. The land was set up, everything was there. There was plans drawn up for it. There was baseball was, people were excited. The Expos were really good. You know, the year they almost won the World Series before the strike wiped everything out. And then in the off season, instead of going for it, they got rid of all their players, you know, and they had their fire sale, and that sort of killed baseball. But I mean, that the fire sale was a reason, you know, you look, even that year when they were the best team, best team in baseball, their attendance was horrible until later in the season, you know, when people caught on and said, okay, this is a good team, let's go now. I just don't think there's enough baseball fans in Montreal right now. I think a new outdoor stadium, I think it would be popular for the first season. But they're talking about not having a roof on the stadium. And even Charles Bronfman, I interviewed him years ago, and he said it'd be hard. You know, baseball can't survive in Montreal without a roof on a stadium. I mean, you look at the weather, April, May, and if the Canadians are in the playoffs, people aren't going to go. If the weather's lousy, people aren't going to go. And so you have the first couple of months of the season, the weather is bad. The last month of the season, the weather is bad. And another thing Montreal has shown, you know, not only is this an event city, it's a city that only supports winning teams. You look what happened to the Alouettes when they started losing. People, you know, Molson Stadium used to be packed every game. It started emptying out when they weren't winning. So I just think we all grew up with baseball, have that soft spot, and you know, Nos Amores, the Expos were called. But, you know, being realistic, I just don't see it happening. I'd love to be proven wrong. It'd be fantastic if baseball came back here, but I personally can't see it.